Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Geekalixia Podcast. David here with Justin, as always, and Randy back from his trek, his expedition through the desert, like Moses himself, going to Vegas, checking out all the cool camera gear. Randy, how the hell are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, but I don't think Moses was checking out camera gear.
He was like...
That was reserved for me.
Oh, just for you.
Just for me.
Special. Oh, great. Well, how are you doing, Justin?
I am fabulous. Thank you.
All right. I was looking up looking up synonyms for sojourn, so I didn't use that again. And there were some fun ones like footslog and tramp and slog. I could use slog. Slog's a good word.
Slog is a good word. And tramp, I feel like, isn't used enough on this podcast.
Right.
Like, I feel like I could refer to Justin as a tramp, you know, on a more regular basis.
Yeah. And it works. So he can be a lovable tramp, or he can be pissed at him. Like, you goddamn tramp.
Yeah, like in the song where it's like, he's a tramp.
What song is that?
It's in Lady and the Tramp.
A little on the nose.
When they're in the pound, and the one dog is like, had him. She like had him once.
Like a prison sitch? Oh, she had him. Okay, yeah. So it's not like, we're not talking prison sitch here.
I was going to say, this isn't the Disney version, is it?
No, I don't. She's talking like she's been there before. Kind of like that Carly Simon song, You're So Vain. The tramp's the vain guy, and she's the one that had him several years ago.
All right, cool. I was just concerned that I had missed the hard prison sex in Disney movies from my childhood. That would have like kind of fucked me up in a way.
Deleted scenes.
Yeah, you know. Subtext.
Speaking of deleted scenes, I was talking to Justin last week about The Lost World, Jurassic Park, the second of the franchise, and then I'd recently rewatched it, and it was actually a pretty good movie. Actually, it took me by surprise how much I enjoyed it. And a couple things stood out for me because it was a special edition, like they showed like deleted scenes, and in one of the scenes it has like the hunter guy, Roland, and he's like in a bar fight. Oh. And so it's like this like group of like, you know, army guys or whatever on the island, on Costa Rica or whatever, and they're like harassing this waitress. And he basically says, hey, don't be a dick. And he goes up to the guy's face, and he's like, man, I could beat you with one hand tied behind my back. And Roland's like, all right. And then Roland ties one of his hands behind his back instead and still kicks this like Marine's ass. And
shit.
It was kind of a cool scene. And it made Roland even a cooler character than he already was.
Yeah, he's cool.
Toe-to-toe with the T-Rex.
Nublar, I hardly know her.
Speaking of Nublar in Jurassic World, Randy, what did you think of that new Jurassic World 2 trailer that just dropped?
Oh, man. It was such an information drop. I know so much more about this movie than I did before. Like, I had no idea that so much of it was going to be taking place off the island. And, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen it yet or is trying to remain spoiler free before going into this movie. This trailer tells you a whole shitload about the movie. Oh, man. Justin, what did you think?
Yeah, for better or worse.
Yeah, do you think it told too much, Justin?
I do. I do. I think it was just a tad bit too revealing. And I'm curious if they decided to give that much information because maybe people weren't excited about it enough. I don't know. Maybe they felt like they had to share more information.
Yeah, I think people weren't super excited about what they had seen so far. Like, the story seemed kind of weak, like you're going to save them because there's a volcano going to kill the dinosaurs. And I think that people thought that was the whole of the story. And I think that people were disappointed. So I think that they had to show a little bit, but I think I agree with you. I think they showed a little too much, especially that reveal that Claire and Owen are basically screwed over.
Yeah. They, oh shit. Oh, the humans are definitely the bad guys in this movie.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Randy, before I interrupted you? As I always do.
I couldn't tell you.
Figures. Well, we know there's going to be a Jurassic Park 3, Randy, so would you like to see a scenario where these dinosaurs just go fucking ham and just start murdering fuckers, and Jurassic World 3 is like Planet of the Apes, but with dinosaurs?
Oh.
That'd be fun. I mean, we heard those rumors way back when Jurassic Park 4 was going to be like raptors that can use machine guns and speak English and crazy shit like that. They were going to be all genetically modified. And from the look of this movie with some new genetically modified beast on mainland, it feels like we're kind of getting closer to that, if you want to call it, original vision for Jurassic 4. So, hell, I mean, anything is possible at this point. But since we know there's going to be another one, I guess that means that at least some of our heroes survive, and at least some of the dinosaurs survive, so shit. It almost takes away some of the suspense, doesn't it?
A little bit of the suspense, if you will. I've actually become kind of obsessed with this YouTube channel. It's called, of course, my screen crashes as soon as I go to look at it. So it's this guy, Clayton.
We know who he is, Clayton. Who's our friend first, Clayton?
Hang on, I'm sorry. Anyway, so what do you think, Justin? Do you think that what you saw before this trailer, was it enough to get you hooked to see the movie, or do you think it needed this little extra bit of goodness?
I guess it needed something, because I wasn't terribly excited. I mean, I love the idea of Jurassic, more Jurassic Park, but what we were shown, that was going to be hard to sustain a 2-hour-plus movie. Just sort of, it was going to be, how long is it going to take them to get on the island, and then how long are they going to be running on the island? So it 100% makes more sense to have this other plot thread. I just, for whatever reason, either wasn't expecting it, or maybe I just wanted to be ignorant when it came to that and been surprised. But I totally get it. It makes sense to show the world that there's more to it than just running from volcanoes.
Running from volcanoes. They move fast, you know.
They do. I don't think I could outrun either a dinosaur or a volcano. So I would have died at the beginning of this motion picture show.
It's like two worlds collide.
Yeah.
I finally found the name of the YouTube channel. It's Clayton Fioriti. And I will shoot you guys a link, but he has hundreds of videos on the Jurassic Park series, and he takes things from the books, from the movies, from the comics, from the games, and he does these really, really cool, like, kind of, like, think pieces on it, and, he chronicles the different dinosaurs, like, the different T-Rexes, like, who they are, and stuff like that, like, you know, which one's which, and stuff, and, I spent like half a day just watching all of his shit and stuff like that. And, so it's definitely worth checking out. So shout out to Clayton.
Yeah, Clayton.
Yeah, that guy.
Clayton Ravine.
Yeah. Eastwood Ravine now. we talked a little bit about the Solo trailer last week, and Randy, you weren't here to weigh in.
We talk about it every week, Dave.
Well, we had actually something to talk about. We always talk about it, but last week we actually had a reason to talk about it because there was that new trailer. But, of course, Randy wasn't here. So maybe we can just real quick get your thoughts on the new trailer and then maybe talk about some details that some eagle-eyed watchers have found.
Well, above and beyond the new full-length trailer, there's been a bunch of TV spots that have dropped over this past week, too. So I'm going to kind of lump it all together when I talk about what I have enjoyed. Every time Lando opens his mouth, I fall more in love with the character, and it makes me even more anxious to see this movie. The full-length trailer, one of the things that I liked the most about it was it didn't feel just like Han Solo's movie. It felt like they really are kind of putting together like an ensemble, almost like an Ocean's 11 kind of feel, where we are going to care about all of these characters equally, not just Han Solo and Chewie. So I'm really kind of digging the direction of it. Every cool little snippet I see of like new Imperial soldiers, like the stormtroopers that are magnetically attached to that train that they're doing the kind of heist on that we see in a bunch of the footage, all that kind of stuff. Every little bit that I see just looks amazing, sounds amazing. I'm loving the dialogue. And the more I see Alden Ehrenreich's performance, now granted, these are just tiny little snippets, I really am kind of digging his take on Han Solo. And in one of the most recent TV spots, there's even a little blip of what may be Slave One flying through a cloud amidst a whole lot of shit happening and the Falcon blasting through. That followed up by a still photograph that was featured in Empire magazine that has Paul Bettany's villain character in the movie looking all cool and scarred up in the foreground, but nobody's looking at him. Everybody's looking at the suit of Mandalorian armor standing right behind him. And we don't know if it's a dude in the armor or if it's just like on display, but you know, it looks different enough to not be Boba Fett, probably, but the mere fact that there is some kind of Mandalorian presence in this movie gives all of us fanboys hope that maybe, just maybe, we're going to see our favorite Fett rolling around somewhere in this film. So, all we can do with
my
this
favorite Fett is Mira Fett. Thank you very much. That's
is that even...
That's Boba Fett's granddaughter.
Okay, I was going to say, is that even canon anymore?
No, of course not.
Yeah. but anyway, yeah, so that's what's going on in the Solo side of things, and I could not be happier with how it's looking, and every single thing I see makes me want to see it that much more.
Nice. I'm glad.
Wait, question. Do you think the train is the climax of the film? Or do you think them getting away with the Star Destroyers and the alleged Slave One, is chasing after him at the end of the movie?
I think that whole portion of it is what you're seeing, that whole cloudy, lightning, whatever that hellish kind of stormy-looking environment that we see is actually the Kessel Run.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think all of that is happening during this Kessel Run thing that happens towards the end of the movie. So I have nothing to, this is not based on any spoilers that I've heard one way or the other. This is purely my own speculation, but it feels like that is going to be what the movie is leading up towards. So
yeah, Kessel is a series of black holes. It's a planet in some, it's called the Maw, which is just a large collection of black holes. And I think that is that little cloudy raining in space type area that we're seeing a lot of our stuff. We may or may not see Slave One.
Are we going to see a Star Destroyer get sucked into a black hole? Would that be kind of cool?
I certainly hope so.
That would definitely be cool.
There's a lot of old expanded universe stuff that takes place in the Kessel and in the Maw and stuff like that. And they keep teasing us that there's going to be a lot of expanded universe stuff. You know, I'm hoping that it's Mala that is the other Wookiee that Chewie is a. Chewie's making out with, and that's like the introduction of the light
there. Tramp.
Exactly. But as far as the Mandalorians go, I definitely think it's just a suit of armor behind Bettany. I think it's kind of like in the 89 Tim Burton Batman, how he's got all those like samurais and the wicker people and stuff like that. I think that's just like he's just like an art collector or like a war collector, and that's just kind of like a piece in his collection.
Yeah, I agree very much, because we have seen other stills from inside what looks like inside that room, and it does look like something of, you know, a collector of rare antiquities.
Question. Matthew McConaughey has survived going into a black hole. Should I be at all concerned that those rules apply to Star Wars?
As long as there's a bookshelf you can always emerge into or out of, or whatever the fuck happened in that movie, you should be safe.
Okay.
So to answer your question, no, you should not be worried, because the way it works is the black holes are close together, and so there are installations inside the like center, not of the actual black holes, but in between the black holes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but why would they be there? That's dangerous.
Because people can't get there, so it's like a secret installation, and so like
how'd they build it?
So through the years, people have like learned like a safe passage through the black through in between the black holes to get to this place. And so the Empire, in expanded universe, it's not canon anymore. They established the Maw installation, which is where the first Death Star was conceived. You know, that's where their think tank was, where they sent all their scientists, because once they found a way in, they basically anyone who knew how to get in had to stay there. And only a select number of Imperial officers knew how to get there. And so Tarkin was in charge of that installation. And there's a character named Admiral Dalla, which becomes a character a big deal down the line. That's where she stations. She controls it. And it's kind of a cool thing. I'm not saying that's going to happen in Solo. Just that there is precedence for the Kessel run, the Kessel installation and stuff like that. And I'm going to double down. I'm going to say not only is Boba Fett in this movie, I think Boba Fett will somehow, not, I'm not saying like back-to-back Charlie's Angels team up with Han Solo, but I think that Boba Fett and Han Solo will be on the same side of some altercation. Because at this point, he's got no reason to not like Han Solo.
And he might not even hate him. It might just be business.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've ever seen any malice at a Mr. Fett. He seems like a well-adjusted individual who wears a helmet and captures and kills people for a living.
Making faces underneath that thing?
Yeah, I'm making faces. But I'm with you, Randy. I'm excited. And they seem to be really putting out a lot of promotional material to educate the audience that this is not part of the Saga trilogy right now. This is just a fun little side quest. It looks amazing. Bradford Young has just the cinematography and the look of the film alone looks amazing.
None of my friends that are not you guys are excited about this movie.
That's fine. Like I said, I think this is going to be this will be the lowest box office opening weekend of any of the new Star Wars movies by a decent clip. And I think that a lot of people are waiting and seeing. And I think that when we see it, if it's great, we're going to tell people. And I think that it will build and have, you know, a decent amount of legs, especially because it comes out after Deadpool. It comes out after Infinity War. So it's got a couple weeks to kind of spread its wing. It's a peacock. It needs to fly.
Sure.
So none of your friends are excited to see it?
No.
Need new friends.
They think it is a dumb.
When Randy and I are your friends and we're excited.
Yeah.
So you have some friends with good taste. Yes. It's just we'll have to wait till after the movie comes out to see which one of us is the ones with the good taste.
Yeah.
Right.
My money's on Randy.
I taste delicious.
I don't know about
a lot of pineapple.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of something that might not taste as good, I think that we can all agree that Mad Max Fury Road was just an okay movie. It was what it was.
That was Randy's pick to be like the most amazing movie of that summer, and we had to eat crow. He was right. That movie was.
We told him he was crazy. And it was going to suck. So Randy's got a point, and you got a Jaws point, so now I got to get a point sometime, somewhere. I don't know when. But the future of the franchise is kind of in question right now because George Miller, who directed all four of the Mad Max films, you know, love him or hate him, is currently suing Warner Brothers for $7 million. And while $7 million is a lot to any of us, and probably anyone listening to the podcast, to a company like Warner Brothers that made hundreds of millions of dollars off of the last Mad Max movie, it seems odd to squabble over this amount of money for someone who clearly knows what he's doing. And so it all stems from George Miller's contract. If he became in under budget, they were going to give him a $7 million bonus. The budget was set at, I want to say, $150 million. He produces the movie, comes out, $148 million, comes in just under the wire. So he's owed the $7 million bonus. But the studio decided they wanted to do $30 million of reshoots, which drastically puts it over the amount. He's attesting that he shouldn't be responsible for that. He delivered the film. They wanted reshoots. He was happy to do them for them, but his movie that he gave to them under budget was what he should be given a bonus on. And I felt like I stumbled through that whole thing. Save me, Randy. Is Warner Brothers just nickel and diamond this guy, and he just give him the money and just pretend it's like part of his race for the next one?
I mean, if that's the bottleneck that is preventing any more Mad Max movies from getting made, then yeah, $7 million is kind of a drop in the bucket, especially when you consider how much money those movies can make and how popular they are. Pay the man his money. Shit. But
shit.
I mean, George Miller is getting up there in age.
He is, but isn't that more of an incentive to, all right, pay him off and let's get another one more of these movies in the can before he kicks the bucket, you know?
Or that Warner Bros. Just waiting him out. I'm like, oh, you can't live forever.
Yeah, no, that's just kind of a shitty way of looking at it. But I just kind of to play devil's advocate and to be the villain, which I tend to end up being on the show more often than I would like.
You do have the mustache.
I do. So I'm sitting here twirling it as I discuss this with you right now. I do see the studio's point of view, though. It's like, yeah, it may have initially come in under budget, but when they are the ones signing the checks and they are the ones demanding the reshoots, George Miller may have been completely fine with the way that his version of the movie, his director's cut, his first cut of the movie turned out. But if obviously the studio isn't fine with it and they need it to be different for whatever the reasons, unless he has in his contract that he gets final cut of it, then the movie's not done. So those $30 million of reshoots, that does need to be taken into account and added to the rest of the budget. So I can see where they would not want to pay him that money. So from an ideological standpoint, I feel like the studio is probably in the right on this, but I think it's just silly because of the fact they're going to... They're going to go in full-on litigation mode on this, and they're probably not going to get it resolved anytime soon, if ever. And what all that's going to do is prevent us from getting another Mad Max movie and prevent the studio from being able to cash in on another Mad Max movie. So all it's doing is hurting themselves. You know, that whole stupid saying, cutting off your nose to spite your face.
I did that once.
And then David sewed it back on. And ever since, it's been a little, you know. But, you know, it looks normal when you squint in the dark.
It's rough.
He sewed my finger back on, too, after a bizarre boating accident.
he's a real surgeon.
Yeah.
Where'd he go? Dave.
Sorry, I was muted. I was making jokes at Randy's expense, saying, "Bet his finger."
I was just describing the bizarre boating accident just this past week.
And you're like, "Oh, I'm fine. I'll have to go to the doctor." I'm like, "Randy, your finger's sideways. We should probably go to the doctor." He's like, "No, I'm fine."
One little, like, 1.5-inch finger bone was broken in 4 places. It's like, how does that happen? And the doctor's like, "Well, you're actually pretty lucky that it didn't just take all the skin right off, like taking off a glove." I'm like, "What?"
And then you learned your lesson not to mess with boat anchors.
Yeah.
And then we got you nice and drunk, and you fell and almost broke it again.
Oh, good God.
And you fell behind the couch.
I forgot about that. And I think it's on video somewhere. That's even worse. Oh, it is.
It's on my bookshelf.
Is it in your hope chest?
It's in my hope chest. But I mean, should they just pay this guy and just get it over with so they can just continue with this franchise? Because obviously they want to make a Mad Max Fury Road sequel. They want to make a Furioso movie. Do they just need this to go away so they can just... I mean, Warner Bros. Has so much bad press right now with all their other franchises. Should they just chalk this up to the cost of doing business and just get on with it?
I think so. I would love to watch a Furiosa movie. I was fascinated by the little side story of steering wheels being so important to these people. And I just want more of that world. And I feel like I would get more of that world with a Furiosa movie than I would with a Mad Max movie.
Well, yeah. You'd certainly get more dialogue that way.
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of face acting.
Mm-hmm.
Say what?
So, I'll take. I say pay the man and get us the more motion picture show. Otherwise, you might go make another Babe movie, and we don't need another one of those.
Did win him an Academy Awards.
The first one did. I don't think Pig in the City did.
No, Pig in the City was not the cultural phenomenon that the first one was.
It went the way of Air Bud 16 or whatever when they're on.
Now they're in space.
Oh, I believe it. Little helmet.
They're helping Santa Claus. They're doing it all. They do it all now. MoviePass. You know, you guys don't have MoviePass. You should, because it's amazing. But the companies estimated they lost $150 million in 2017, which it's not hard to imagine why. You know, we pay, you know, $8 a month for this service, and you know, if you go one to the movies one time in a month and give them a $13 ticket, they're losing $5 right there. You go more than one movie, you know, they're totally effed. So they kind of came under fire for, you know, if they were going to be able to sustain this. And the owner of MoviePass, or the company that owns MoviePass, came out and said that they have quite a reserve. They understand they're going to be losing money for the first couple years, and so not to freak out. They have about $250 million in their reserve, and they have about a $400 million line of credit. So MoviePass isn't going anywhere, according to them. But this kind of comes on the heels of some other bad press for MoviePass. Of course, a couple months ago, with the whole Red Sparrow debacle, where they stopped showing showings for Red Sparrow because Death Wish was advertising with them. So they were showing the Death Wish showtimes and not the Red Sparrow showtimes. So I mean, I don't know. It seems like kind of like we're in like this weird nebulous area now. There are actually competitors to MoviePass that have come out that offer you more upscale showings and stuff like that. So I never really got your guys' take on if either of you were interested in actually getting a MoviePass.
Yeah, Jeff? I just dragging my feet. I do know two people that tried to get a MoviePass and they paid for it, but it never arrived. And I have somebody, I know another person that got a MoviePass and it arrived like a week later. So I don't know. It is a 50-50.
Right. Yeah, I got mine the same time as Chung, and I got mine in like days, and he got his like a month later.
Yeah, it kind of sucks for some people.
Yeah, I've heard real similar stories. Some people that never got it, or ones that just took forever, ones that got it practically overnight. So it's dramatically ranging all over the place. But the people who do have it and who do use it really do seem to love it. I, much like you, Justin, I just kind of never got around to pulling the trigger on it. So I was just kind of waiting to see how it worked for everybody else before I jumped in. And now I'm not sure. Now I'm even more uncertain.
Yeah, how do they expect to make money? I don't understand.
So there's several ways they want to make money. So right off the gate right now, they get a percentage of the movie tickets sold. So they get like a couple dollars off every movie ticket that are sold through their app. They're trying to negotiate with the theater chains to get portions of the concessions. But they claim that their big thing is their data collecting. You know, they're collecting data on like what kind of movies people are seeing, you know, how often they're going to the movies, and data like this is worth a lot of money to the studios, and that their eventual goal is to become a data aggregator for the studios, as well as this Sundance, they actually purchased two films. And so they're actually getting into the film distribution game as well, which is a semi-conflict of interest. You know, because if they own the movie, they're going to want to push that movie out. But they are making strides to make it more easily acceptable, easier to use for people who don't want to go all the way to the theater to get their tickets. Several chains of like the smaller chains, like Starlight and Landmark and stuff like that, they allow you to purchase your ticket ahead of time off-site. It's called e-ticketing, to where you can purchase a ticket, you know, 2 weeks down the road. Straight from your phone. It's not something you have to do the day of when you're actually at the theater, which is how you normally have to do it. And so, I mean, they are trying to improve their app. I'm a big fan of it, obviously, because it's allowed me to see a lot more movies that I may not normally have seen, because I'm paying the same if I see one movie or 10. But for me, it's been a seamless and just incredibly easy process. And outside of people not taking a while to get their passes, I think once they get their pass, they've realized that it's just super easy. You know, basically, your movie pass is a debit card, and so when you check in for a movie, it pre-authorizes that debit card for the amount that ticket costs. And then you just go up to the ticket kiosk, you say, hey, I want one ticket for Solo, a Star Wars movie. They say that's $14. You give them your movie pass, they swipe it, and that's it.
Okay, so like when I went to buy my Avengers ticket on Thursday, for Thursday, It said no passes. Is that referring to movie pass, or is that referring to free tickets?
Yeah, that's referring to like those, like a lot of times they'll give like tickets Or you'll get like coupon tickets for like discounted tickets. But usually those movies have to be out for 10 days before you can use it. So yeah, no passes.
So like when I went to the movies and let's say the film broke and I had to wait 15 minutes for them to fix it and they hand me a free ticket, it's that kind of pass?
It could be that kind of pass. It depends on the theater. That could be it. But typically what they mean is like, you remember those like old entertainment books that had like all the coupons and stuff in it?
Uh-huh.
A lot of the coupons in, they all had a lot of movie ticket coupons in there to where you get like a movie ticket for like $4 or something like that. But the caveat was is that you had to use those on movies that had been out for over 10 days. So okay. Basically after their second weekend, you could use them. And usually that's what it means by no passes. But some chains could also snowball the other ones in there as well.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it does not refer to MoviePass.
I understand.
Because yeah, MoviePass, you just use your, it's just like using a credit card.
So yeah, so we were just talking last week about how the Avengers is going to make $1 trillion. That's a lot of money that MoviePass isn't going to be making.
Correct. Yeah, because I mean, conceivably every time I use my MoviePass, they're losing money.
Right.
I mean, a movie ticket's like $14. You know, I only pay $8 a month.
So you should quit going to keep them in business.
Yeah, I should really be concerned about their corporate profits.
Such a dick, Dave.
I'm a bit of a dick, but I recommend you guys get MoviePass, especially now. You know, just in case they decide they want to up the price, buy it from Costco. Costco had a sweet deal. It's like $100 for the year, so it comes out to like less than $8 a month. So do it. Don't wait. Do it now.
Got it.
Don't walk. Run.
Consider it done.
Sweet. Yeah. Did you guys see they were gonna make? They're thinking about making a Mask movie.
Yeah, it's crazy. I feel like we've been talking about that forever, though.
Yeah, but now they got an actual A-list kind of director guy who's got clout behind him. So, I mean, it's just kind of on par with like the He-Man movie. You know, movies that may never happen, but. Were you a big Mask guy, Justin?
Yeah, I had a ton of toys. I had the Boulder Hill playset. I remember the first Mask toy I ever got was the good guy's car, the red car. He was like the leader, and
Matt Trecker.
That's it. And I got it at a Best department store.
Did you turn in your slip and it came down the conveyor belt?
Yeah, pretty much. Kind of cool. I'll never forget that.
Yeah,
man, I was so into Mask when I was a kid.
Bitching.
I thought it was so cool. I don't really remember the cartoon at all. I know there was an accompanying cartoon, and I know there was like this round table they'd all sit around, and the masks would just descend like onto their head or something like that.
Yeah,
it was like this whole thing. That's really all I remember from it, though. But I think I have much more fond memories of playing with the toys than I did watching the show. So. If they could make a movie that isn't absolutely cheesy, I think it would probably be a better adaptation than Rampage.
Did you see Rampage?
I haven't, but I'm just basing it off the sheer ridiculousness and my love for the original arcade game. It just seems so weird to me that they would pick that property to turn into a movie. Did you see it, David?
I did not. I was like, eh. And I was just shocked that everyone was just like saying it was going to be like this like huge box office juggernaut. I'm like, am I going crazy here? But I mean, it was number one at the box office. But I mean, I guess
I don't think it was up against much though at the time.
No, just the movie I saw, Quiet Place.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, that's a fun one though.
It was good.
Yeah.
But F.K. Gray, he's cool guy. He's got the Fate of the Furious under his belt. Set It Off. I love that movie.
He's straight out of Compton.
Straight out of Compton. Law-Abiding Citizen. That's a terrible movie. Hated that movie. Holy shit, that movie sucks so bad. That was when Gerard Butler's just making one bad movie after another, though. Interestingly enough, though, I like Olympus Has Fallen. London Has Fallen. Yeah, I like that one a lot. I thought that one was cool.
Did you not like Olympus Has Fallen?
It was alright. It was fun.
Yeah?
I didn't hate it. I saw it in the theater. But I did not see Geostorm. I tried watching Gods of Egypt on fucking HBO, but I shot myself in the face and missed it. But Mask was fun. Again, I had the Boulder Hill playset. I used to play in my backyard every day with that, and then it turned into Randy's Mustafar set from episode 3.
Yeah, and then it turned into the Temple playset.
That's right!
From the Indiana Jones line.
That's
they got
right.
a lot of use. That one playset saw a lot of use.
That's so cool how they do that shit.
They're being recycling.
Yep.
Good stuff. I was never... I always remember that I liked the bad guys better. They had cooler stuff. And I remember the main guy was like Venom. And his thing turned from like a jet to a helicopter. And I'm like, that's not really a big change.
Yeah. I liked the orange Jeep. You know, orange is my favorite color and all. And I liked how... I think his name was Gator. And you just kind of pressed a little lever. And then a jet ski boat type thing. He shot out the Jeep. It's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, like the top part of the Jeep body just flips upward. And a little boat just jumps out of the center of it.
That was cool.
And then there was the guy with the little motorcycle in the sidecar, and the sidecar would turn into a little submarine. Like, the little window would kind of slide up to seal it, and then we could just totally go underwater with it. That was the very first one I ever got, and I fell in love with it from that one toy, and then I ended up getting so much of it. It was just so cool. I really liked the scale of the figures, because that way you could get these big-ass vehicles and playsets that didn't take up as much room as it would have if they were the same scale as Star Wars figures. Totally. And in fact, because Kenner made both, and they noticed how popular that scale was becoming, because not only the Mask line is that size too, but it went on to a line of toys called Sky Commanders and...
I forgot about Sky Commanders with the zip
Dino
ports.
Riders, yeah.
Yeah, holy shit, forgot all about that. Dino Riders, that's badass. Yeah,
there was a whole bunch of stuff that came out around that mid to late 80s period that had those same size figures. So there's a couple prototype Star Wars figures that they kind of had shrunken down. And at the end of the popularity of Star Wars, when they were trying to think of new ways to revitalize it, they're like, well, what if we maybe put out little 3-inch figures? That way all the vehicles and shit would be smaller, and it might reinvigorate the line. But it never ended up happening, of course, but it's cool to see that they kind of thought about that idea.
Yeah.
Because even being, especially the Mask figures, being smaller, a full inch smaller than the Star Wars toys, they had more articulation because you could bend their knees because they were meant to go inside vehicles.
Right.
So you kind of had to.
And their helmets came off. So you had little white face that didn't look like much, and then they had the sick-ass helmet that went on top.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so I remember having... There was the semi-truck that was like the good guy truck, the Rhino, I think it was called, and that was super cool. It had this giant missile launcher in the back, and it was like all these transforming pieces. And then there were the bad guy's truck, too, that turned into like a mobile base. The whole back end of it just went upright and had this like multi-level... like missile launching system kind of thing, and I just remember those playsets were just so cool. Anyway, didn't mean to derail it with all the toy talk, but
that's fine. I was not a huge Mask toy guy, so I'm glad that you guys were, so you could make us all sound smart.
Oh man, I remember I got one of them at an Alpha Beta, for those listeners out there that are old enough to know what an Alpha Beta grocery store was. Good shit.
Well, I have a choice for you guys. I have two fun lists that I thought we could talk about, and I wanted you guys to pick which one you wanted to talk about. The first one is 17 action figures / cartoons from the 80s that could be awesome movies, or 10 80s cartoons you probably don't remember.
Ooh.
One's kind of a tester, and the other one's kind of a trip down memory lane.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of both of these. Well, how about we do one this week and one the other, so it doesn't matter.
Perfect. All right. Well, we'll start with, since we're talking about Mask being a movie, we'll do the 17 awesome movies that are figures or cartoons that could be awesome movies. And you guys talked about the first one right off the bat, Dino Riders.
Ah.
It seems like a slam dunk. I don't know why this movie hasn't been made.
Jurassic Park.
With guns on the dinosaurs.
And the interesting thing is it was like humans on one side and then like these insect humanoids. Like they were upright and had arms and legs like humans, but they had these giant insect heads. And those were like the bad guys, I think. So I don't know. I don't even remember what the deal was with that.
The good Valorians and the evil Rulons. The Valorians were a superhuman race, and the Rulons were a mixture of humanoid creatures who both came from the future.
Yeah, they're like hammerhead-looking dudes.
Yeah. It wasn't just insect. It was all manner of beast.
Yeah,
the Valorians befriended the dinosaurs while the Rulons brainwashed them.
Yeah, that shit was cool. I remember I kept getting this, it was called like a Brontosaurus toy, right? And it kept missing a part of the harness to put it all together. I had to take that fucker back twice.
That's so frustrating.
I know, and that was like the Mondo one. That was the big dude. Tyco was the company that made those.
Tyco. Got Tyco with your money. Sorry. Next on the list is Starcom. Do you guys remember Starcom, the action figures?
Oh, yeah. I think they had like little magnets on their feet, and they had like little ships. And they were only like 2 inches tall, the figures. They weren't very big. They had all sorts of interesting vehicles, and I don't remember if there was a show to accompany it, but
I think it was just toys. But yeah, you nailed it. They had the magnets on their feet and stuff like that. They were smaller figures, and they were it was followed by an animated series that was made to help promote NASA and get kids interested in the space program. So
that was a big thing in the 80s. I mean, NASA was a big deal, and everybody loved watching space shuttles launching, and I mean, I can't imagine I was alone in desperately wanting to go to space as a child.
Space and Camp?
Then, yeah, the movie, exactly. Movies like Space Camp or Explorers or shit like that.
Sure.
Just really drove that point home for me.
Yeah, they really did, man.
Go
ahead.
Sorry. No, you go.
I was going to say, I mean, it just sucked when you're a little boy and the Challenger is taking off and you're watching it in school and then you see it fucking blow up on TV. That was like the worst thing ever.
You're like, maybe I don't want to be an astronaut
like,
anymore.
Canceling space. This is the space worst.
Space closed. I don't even remember this next one on the list. Power Lords. Do you guys know what this is?
I don't.
See this or heard about this?
It doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah, it looks weird, so... the next one I never heard of either, Brave Star.
Fuck yeah, dude. It's like a Western.
Yeah, it's a Western. He's got this like gun that shoots from the top and the bottom. It's like this double gun, and they had these like red crystals, and it was kind of like the toys they made for it was almost kind of like a laser tag.
Yeah,
totally. It was interactive. You shoot stuff with it, and like they made like this whole little like town facade playset kind of thing that if you shot certain parts of it, it would interact and do things.
I think they even had like a VHS tape you could kind of play along with and shoot at your TV.
That sounds familiar. That reminds me of Captain Power, which is probably also on this list.
Oh, maybe that's what that was, Captain Power. But I do remember a Brave Star cartoon.
Yeah, side-scrolling. Well, yeah, you guys never cease to amaze me. I actually sent you a list so you can see the cool pictures and go down memory road and stuff like that. The next on the list was Shogun Warriors. Do you guys ever watch that?
I remember the toys, but I was never into the show. Shogun Warriors, they had like a lot of cool like mech-looking kind of toys, and there was a lot of like firing missiles and like fists firing out of robots' arms and stuff like that. That's all I really remember of that, but it was really popular at the time.
And you were 100% right, Randy. Captain Power was the interactive TV laser game where your gun was like a spaceship and you shoot at your TV.
Yeah. I had a lot of those. So, and they had a cool ass play set for that one too, but I'm sure we'll get there when the list demands it.
I'm sure. The next one, I'm actually pretty shocked. It has not been made yet. Thundercats, you know, that was a pretty popular show. And it's got some rich themes and stories that could easily mine for the big screen. I guess we're just not ready for anthropomorphic cats like we are for turtles. So you guys all watch Thundercats, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They're on the move. Thundercats are loose.
Thundercats are loose. But you know, Wile E. Kit and Wile E. Cat were kind of annoying. Snarf is like the worst ever.
Snarf.
That if you were to watch it again, you'd probably want to just pull your hair out. It's terrible.
No, well, I mean, I'm sure they would update it. Because look at the old Transformers. You know, Bumblebee's super annoying. A lot of the old Transformers are annoying, and they kind of modernized them to where...
Right, I agree. I'm just saying the feeling of nostalgia will wear off so fucking fast just watching an episode.
Oh, the old one? Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried watching Voltron, not only like the old Voltron. And it was
terrible.
watchable.
So bad. And then Silverhawks was like that too. It was pretty lame.
Yeah. The next one on the list is Madelman 2050.
No idea.
That sounds familiar at all.
Yeah,
these Spanish action figures were inspired by G.I. Joe.
Yeah, it clearly must have been something in Spain because I don't remember being a thing here.
We'll move on to Inhumanoids.
Oh, I loved Inhumanoids. They had these big beast creatures, and then there were some humans that would fight them that were kind of in these different, like, armored suits. And they're not, like, medieval type of armor. It's more like hazmat suits is what they look like. But they had these really neat light pipe helmets. So it's like there's this little receptor at the top, and then if any light hits it, it makes it look like their eyes light up and glow, and different parts of the monster look like they would light up because they had that whole light pipe system. The same thing that Kenner would use further on down the line in 1995 when they released the R2-D2 action figure in the Power of the Force 2 line, and it made it look like his little eye was glowing. It's that thing. It's called a light pipe, and it's basically taking light from above, bending it, and then shooting it out the where they want to make it look like it's illuminated. But Inhumanoids was the first toy line that I remember as a kid that had that, and I thought that was the coolest technology. I thought, wow, it's so cool. It's like it lights up without a battery, but it was pretty darn cool.
They're huge too. I'm looking at this old commercial they have, and then they're big toys.
Yeah. And then they had an animated series too, and the theme song for it, which I think also played during the commercials. You hear that a couple times, and I kid you not, it will get stuck in your head, and then you're going to be singing the Inhumanoids theme song over and over. I'm hearing it in my head now, and it's already driving me nuts.
You're like, no. Next on the list is Muscle, those little pink little wrestling guys.
Yes,
everyone had, because they were cheap and abundant. I remember having a ton of Muscle figures, and I loved them to death.
Yeah, you get like a 5-pack or a 6-pack or something stupid like that.
I think you get like a little barrel full of them.
Yeah, you could do that too. Yeah.
And the cool thing about that is those are seeing a revival now because our buddies over at Super 7, they're making a bunch of Muscle figures. They made ones for
Street Fighter.
He-Man. They're doing it for other stuff too, other properties. It's really kind of neat to see these Muscle figures coming back.
Yeah. Do you know what Muscle stands for?
No.
I couldn't tell you.
Millions of unusual small creatures lurking everywhere.
I don't believe it.
That's pretty perfect for what it was.
They had some dumb ones too. There's one that was like a wall. Just like this pink brick wall.
I got shoe. Yeah.
Got like a fat guy. It was like a wrestler guy. It was pretty silly.
Next on the list is Visionaries, Knights of the Magical Light.
I didn't watch that. I don't know what that is.
Now, I don't remember watching the show, but I did have, like, one of these figures, and it must have been gifted to me for a birthday or something like that, because I don't know where else I would have got it from. But they had these cool little shields on their chest that were a hologram, so you can kind of move it around, and it just kind of showed, like, what side they were aligned with, like, the good guys had one symbol, the bad guys had another, if I remember correctly. I don't remember if this is the same line that had, like, the bad guys were kind of almost, like, ghostly, and then they had some whole big hologram thing. Like, you would peel off part of the front of the figure, and there would be, like, a head and a torso that's ghostly looking and kind of holographic. It might be an entirely different line that I'm thinking of, but I know that Visionaries had a holographic element to their action figures.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, they had both a shield and their chest actually glowed, had the little hologram on it, and they were a little ghostly.
Cool.
Yeah, there you go.
My memory isn't completely shot from...
No. You never remember a goddamn thing we tell you, but you remember all these toys.
Man. You remember all about Visionaries.
Clearly, toys must have had a bigger impact on me than most of the other shit that's happened in the last 25 years.
Than your two best friends in the whole world.
Sad. So sad.
Probably don't even know what your wife's birthday, but you remember these guys. I know your own anniversary. What about Battle Beasts? Do you remember Battle Beasts?
I do. I had a hippo and I had a giraffe.
Those guys were great. They had like the little color changing or like the heat changing kind of technology for their little stickers on their chest so that you could tell what side they were on. Remember when Transformers did that and you could kind of like put your thumb over that and it would show either a Decepticon or an Autobot logo?
Yep.
The Battle Beasts did the same thing. And they were short little figures about 2 or 3 inches tall. And it was just like armored raptors and rhinoceroses and just like giraffes and random just animals in armor with silly kind of like melee weapons. But I don't really remember what the point of it was, but anything that had that like color changing or like invisible until you heat it up, then it becomes visible, insignia on them, all that kind of shit, that was just kitschy enough to really get the attention of 80s kids, because, you know, we didn't have internet porn or internet at all, so, you know, we weren't easily distracted, or I guess we were easily distracted at that age by toys, so it didn't take much to get us excited, and apparently that did the trick.
And that's true, because they were very innovative in the 80s when it comes to toys, especially like the He-Man line. They had like the Skunk Or guy, they had the fucking the Moss Man guy, and then here you have these fun little stickers. All these interesting ways to totally change the way we collect toys, which is really weird because it takes them months and months and months to make this shit. It's just crazy to think that, you know, it's a gamble. Our kid's going to go for this sort of thing. And it's just one of those things where you have to have it. And then you get, like, a slime pit. Slime was really big in the 80s, too. I bet parents fucking hated that shit.
As a parent now, I can tell you I hate that shit. Slime seems to be making a comeback.
Yeah, I was going to say kids are making their own slime now. Yeah. I see, like, all these, like, how-to videos.
With the gallon glue and everything, yeah.
Yeah, how to make edible slime, how to make pizza-flavored slime. It's like, man, I don't need to be eating that shit. And I don't think kids probably should either.
Too much slime. Do you know the Battle Beast was actually a spinoff of Transformers?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
So I guess that makes sense that they would have those little stickers on their chest, because that's the exact same shit that Transformers was doing at the time.
Yeah. Galvatron was their guy. They were under Galvatron's thumb, and they had to escape his evil clutches. Next on the list, Justin mentioned it earlier, is Silverhawks, which is basically Thundercats in space, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about the show, really, but I did have a few of the figures. They were pretty cool. They were all, like, vac metalized, so they're all super shiny looking, like C-3PO figures from back in the day. And you squeeze their legs together, and their arms snap out directly to their sides, and they had this little wing thing that kind of clipped onto their wrists, and it was kind of like either plugged into their back or part of their back, and they would just, like, these wings would pop up so you can kind of have them just flying around.
One of them spins. Watch this commercial.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, like their boss, the guy that sends them out on the missions or whatever, I remember he had this, like, bionic eye or something like that that you could look through. He didn't have any wings or anything cool, but you could, like, look through his chest or look through his eye, and it was, like, this little thing that just kind of, I don't know, it's like looking down the scope of a gun or something like that.
I had two. I had Bluegrass, the guy with the guitar, and then I had this green guy. His name was Flashback. That was it.
It's funny you talk about the guy with the guitar. He's like the main picture on the under Silverhawks. I'm like, hey, I know who you're talking about. I remember there was a character named Will or something like that. I remember, like, every episode there seemed to be the saying, like, if there's a will, there's a way.
Oh my God.
That's all I remember from the show.
So dumb.
Next up is Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future.
Yeah, that was definitely the one we were talking about.
I'm watching the video there of someone shooting this TV.
Yeah, that's like Dread before Dread.
Totally, yeah, because he never took his helmet off, and he was just kind of like, yeah, you know, I do remember that it was live action. It wasn't even necessarily animated, was it?
Yeah, I don't know when the very first Dread thing ever came to be. That could have very well been first, by the way, but
yeah, they ripped off Dread.
That was pretty cool. When you got shot, like, if you didn't, like, dodge and move and everything, your vehicle that you're shooting the screen with, if you got hit, it would eject the figure out of the cockpit. It would, like, take battle damage.
Right.
And it made all sorts of noise.
Yeah, it would, like, you totally just lost the war, and you feel defeated when your guy flies out. March 5th, 1977 was the very first appearance of Judge Dredd. So, that goes to show that this Captain Power is a ripoff of Dredd.
Oh. Yeah, he does kind of look like a Dredd ripoff.
It's like Dredd had sex with a Cylon.
Mm, now we're talking.
That's kind of cool. And then they ripped off the whole concept of laser tag.
Yeah, but how cool. I'm watching this commercial, and you get to get shoot, and like the ship falls apart, and the guy falls out.
That's
pretty cool.
You die when that happens. The way it was, because I had a VHS, one of the episodes, they put out like three different VHS, and it would come with figures, or it would come with the ship, or something like that. But I had one of them, and like the screen would flash when they were firing at you, or when it was something that you had to fire at. That a certain part of the screen would be a very specific color, or it would kind of like flash between like black and red or something like that. It did something that some sort of little photo sensor inside the gun unit registered. You know, it's kind of like how the old zapper gun worked for the old NES. It would only work with old tube TVs, with CRT TVs. I doubt if you were to get any of this old Captain Power stuff now and try to roll around with it on an LCD screen, I doubt it would work, because I think it needs something that those old tube TVs did to be able to communicate with the toy. But it's kind of a neat relic from the past.
It looks kind of cool. Next is Supernaturals. So I remember this, they had a theme too.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember the theme, but this was the line that I was thinking of, where like the head and the torso was very ghostly. So I'm looking at the pictures on the list right now, and there were like these little half things. It was like, it looks kind of like a human cut off at the waist, so it was just kind of like a little ghostly things with the head and arms. And it had these cool little holograms in the center. I don't remember having more than like one or two of these guys, so again, it was probably just like a one-off random birthday gift, but I was into the bizarre hologram stuff, so who knows?
What about you, Justin? Did you own Supernaturals?
No.
Yeah. I remember seeing commercials for them, but I never owned any.
Not my jam.
No. What about the Centurions?
Yeah, I had those. In fact, these guys are crazy because they had holes all over their bodies because they had these ridiculous accessories that it'd be like a jetpack and like a rocket launcher, and they would just be like little pegs that fit onto their person. But they also had a 900 number that you could call and talk to them, and I ran up a ridiculous phone bill once I was a little kid wanting to talk to these fuckers, and my mom knew instantly that I was to blame. All of a sudden, she has like this $300 phone bill. She's like, Justin, what is this number that you called? Oh, it was great. My dad was away at sea, and I just was like, I needed a father figure, man. I needed to talk to a Centurion.
And the Centurions were there for you.
You're trying to blame your sisters for calling the Centurion hotline?
Oh my god, it's fantastic. Never forget that. They were big toys, too. They were stupid.
Yeah, they
big.
Were like... I don't remember if they were like a full-on 12 inches or if they were shorter than that, but I remember them being very big in my hand compared to the other stuff I usually played with. I only had one of them.
I had the blue guy, whatever he was.
I had the yellow guy. He had like a jetpack thing.
So dumb!
I clearly missed out on some of these toys here. Jack Kirby actually designed them. He's one of the designers of Centurions.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Small worlds.
Yeah.
We actually talked about the next one, Mask, already, but Mask, which we now know may actually become a film.
Sure.
Paramount owns the rights for that. But, Mask should be fun. And then the final entry on the list is Voltron, which seems like it'd be a pretty cool movie, but I guess Transformers making billions of dollars wasn't enough to get them off their asses to make a Voltron movie.
They have a pretty successful Netflix series. It's pretty good. It's like revived. I remember buying the Voltron Lions when they came out. They were die-cast. It was very heavy. The box was really big. The box was probably like the length of... I'd say maybe like a desktop keyboard, I would say, is about the length of it. And then all the lions had a flap that you could lift up so you could see all the lions in the box. and it was so fucking cool, and it had the black line in the center, and then sort of the arms, the red and the green on the top, and then the yellow and the blue feet on the bottom, and it was so badass. And I remember it was kind of expensive. I feel like it was in the neighborhood of upwards of $50, and my mom wasted no time at all getting it for me. She must have thought that I really deserved it. I fell in love with it as soon as I picked it up. And it was at sort of this outdoor swap meet in San Diego is where I got it.
Okay, it's really funny that you mentioned that, because I remember having one of these as a kid too, but I didn't have the official one. I had like some bootleg version that I picked up at a swap meet because I couldn't afford the real thing. So I remember getting my Voltron at a swap meet too, and it came with like all the little missiles were on these sprues like you would get in a model kit, and you had to like pop them off and everything.
Totally.
But none of the little missile launchers would work, or you'd use it once and it would break, and I'm like, I don't know if this is the real thing. And then that was when I learned that a lot of stuff that you buy at the swap meet is probably not legitimate.
Yeah, just imports from like Mexico or some shit. Yeah.
Totally.
Hecho in Mexico.
Yeah. Oh, that's good shit, man. And you know what's crazy is I had mine totally intact for so long, and it wasn't until I came home one weekend in college, is my junior year, and I saw it in my closet. I was like, oh, fuck yeah. I picked it up, and I dropped it like 2 seconds later, and one of the little red ears on the black line popped off. His jaw popped off. The black line's jaw also popped off. It was sad. And then, like, the yellow lion, his ears sort of went into his skull, and you could kind of pop them out. And one of those broke off, too. I was devastated. I had this fucking thing for, like, almost 20 years, and I dropped it as an adult in, like, 2 seconds. I felt like such an asshole.
It is a kid.
I know. And it weighed a ton. If you're 6 years old and holding this big-ass, heavy die-cast thing, it was couldn't do much with it.
I think the toy came out before the animated series, at least the big heavy metal diecast toy, because it was probably big in Japan first before coming over here.
Like the song.
Yeah, exactly. And then after the animated series became popular, they put out a line of plastic lions that were big enough to accommodate 3¾-inch action figures. Now, it obviously wasn't the right scale as it was in the show, because in the show, like the head of the lion is like a little cockpit, and it's giant. It's like Power Rangers kind of style. But for this one, the lions would still combine to form Voltron, and you could have the figure sit inside each individual lion, and it was a full-on 3¾-inch scale. So I ended up collecting that whole line of figures. I didn't get all the lions that went with it. I only got a couple, but I remember being really into that version of it, more so than the metal one, but probably because my metal one was cheap, busted, and fake.
Yeah.
Bootleg.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking cool, man. The heads popped off of the arms. They had the giant sword. The mouths open on the lions, and their legs were really articulate because you had to be able to kind of tuck them up like they would be, you know, getting ready to pounce kind of thing. Picture that when you tuck it in and put it all together. So, you know, the joints on their what would be like their wrists and their ankles actually worked pretty well, and even their knees and elbows. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah. Another thing I remember is it had a really strong theme song, like a really good theme. I remember really digging that. Like, I would get so excited if I heard it come on TV. I would just, like, run across the house, plop myself down, and just get ready to watch some animated lions kick some ass.
Yeah, like, this is happening. And they're in their sweet little elevators, and they got their little key card type things that came off their uniforms. And the Black Lion kid was always telling everybody what to do all the time.
You're my boss. And the Blue Lion was the Blue Lion the girl?
Yeah. And then what's crazy is that the guy in red actually drove the Black Lion, and then the guy in blue drove the Red Lion. The green was green and yellow was yellow, but the.
And the girl wore pink, but she was
in the pink.
She was in the blue one. It's like how hard is it? You're supposed to be color coded. What the fuck?
The Power Rangers can do it. Why can't you do it?
Idiots. Yeah.
This is not rocket science.
Jesus.
I remember cool. You were the cool kid if you had Voltron.
I was cool.
You were the coolest.
Yeah. That was fucking so badass.
Yeah.
I want to play with it again.
Go on the eBay and pay through the nose.
Oh, man, that's so much money.
I'm sure.
They made a 25-year anniversary edition or some shit that you could probably still get for relatively cheap, but I bet it's still over $100. It's not the same thing, though.
You probably break that one, too.
I know. It was heavy, man. Leave me alone. I just forgot how heavy it was.
You were stronger as a kid.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the 17 action figure / cartoons from the 80s that would be awesome movies. Mm. Some of them, I think, could be good movies.
Yeah. Do you remember Bionic 6?
That was good. Yeah. They had those metal figures, the die-cast figures. They were heavy as hell. They had like a whole Bionic 6 headquarters playset and stuff. They had certain parts of the body that were cast in plastic, but they were like see-through. Yeah, I was all over that line. It was pretty cool. I never owned any of them, but I thought they looked really neat. Well, they looked really neat hanging on the store shelves.
Right. And Sky Commanders wasn't even on this list, Dave.
What didn't I say? Or what was... Oh, well, maybe it was like... What was the Dread ripoff?
That was Brave Star. No, Captain Power.
Captain Power, yeah.
Oh. Sky Commanders had like these little neon-colored ropes that you would basically tie across your house, and you would clamp a big piece of a base of a vehicle to like a countertop or something, and then you'd press a little release button, and then the vehicle would split apart, and then it would kind of sort of grapple down on your ropes that you had intricately placed throughout your house.
It had two different means of transport. One of them were ropes that you could like slide figures down like zip lines, or smaller vehicles would go on them. But it also had these ribbons that were like an inch and a half wide. And it was a little bit of a thicker material, and that would kind of form almost like a bridge. And there are certain vehicles, they weren't battery powered, if I remember correctly. I think you had to wind them up, and they would just kind of travel down, and you could like have a figure sitting in, piloting it and stuff. Those ones were really cool. I used to have those set from, I had these shelves that I used to keep stuff on display in my bedroom, and I would connect them from there to my dresser, and I would have all these lines of ribbons going all across.
Like a serial killer or a police officer trying to figure out the clues.
It was like a neon spider web.
If there was a golden era for toys, the fucking 80s was it, man.
Yeah, you know, that's the reason why Toys R Us is closing, because
we
are far beyond the golden age.
Well, they're all boring in the air. They're all the same now, it seems. But yeah, that's all I got. You guys you got anything, you two? Rats again?
I just want to play with my old toys that I don't have anymore.
You can't go back.
Making me want to go dig through my storage unit.
Thank you guys for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Make sure you listen to the other podcast in the Geek Legacy Network of amazing entertainment, which is the Pixelated Podcast, hosted by Justin over here and Stephen K. James, where they talk about video games. And they'll make you laugh, they'll make you cry, they'll make you punch your screen, they'll make you say, "These guys, they know what they're talking about." And then, of course, make sure you like us on all the social medias in the world at Geek Legacy. And until next time, we will talk to you another time.